Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Gans, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Bet, Chapter 2. This is by far the longest perek in our Sefer. It's 70 psukim, and it contains a list of people that made Aliyah from Bavel back to Yehuda and Yerushalayim to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. The returnees are tallied by category, as we will see, and at the end of the chapter, the total number is recorded. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Ve'ela b'nei ha-medina, these are the people of the province, ha'olim mishvi ha-gola, who came up from among the captive exiles, asher hagla Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel le-Bavel, whom King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had carried into exile to Babylon, v'yashuvu li-Yerushalayim v'Yehuda ish le-Iro, and they returned to Yerushalayim and to Yehuda, each to his own city. Asher ba'u im Zerubbabel, who came with Zerubbabel, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sariah, Re'eliah, Mordechai, Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai, Rechum, Bana, Mispar, Anshei, Am Yisrael. A whole bunch of names, the list of the men of the people of Israel. The chapter, the perek, then proceeds with the list of the families who made Aliyah. This is the kind of perek with line after line of unfamiliar names that we might be tempted to sort of skip over. Yet to Ezra, this list is so important that it is actually repeated with some minor variation in Sefer Nehemiah, Perek Zion, chapter 7. There, we are told that the individuals on this list are Ha'olim Barishona, those who went up to Eretz Yisrael first. The placement of this list right after Ezra Perek Aleph also gives us the impression that the people listed here made Aliyah immediately in response to the Cyrus Proclamation in 538 BCE. If that is the case, it's curious that Sheshbatzar, the so-called Prince of Yehuda, who was entrusted with the temple vessels back in Perek Aleph, is conspicuously absent from our list in Perek Bet, and in fact disappears entirely from the narrative going forward. We assume that Sheshbatzar probably led the first, likely small wave of returnees back to Yerushalayim, though we are not told what becomes of him. Sheshbatzar is followed shortly thereafter by another pair of leaders who lead a much larger wave of immigration and spearhead the initial efforts to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. These leaders are the first names on the list in Ezra Perek Bet, Zerubbabel and Yehoshua. Who is Zerubbabel? In Sefer Haggai, Zerubbabel is called Pachat Yehuda, governor of Judah. He has been appointed by the Persian government to oversee the province of Yehuda. We know from Sefer Divrei Hayamim that Zerubbabel is a descendant of David HaMelech, King David, like his relative Sheshbatzar, so he's already of royal stock and highly regarded in the Jewish community. The Persians were known to appoint local leaders as provincial governors in order to ensure goodwill and stability throughout their empire. Zerubbabel is accompanied by Yehoshua, the Kohen Gadol, who will preside over the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash. Like Moshe and Aaron, Zerubbabel and Yehoshua operate as a team. One is rarely mentioned without the other. After recording the leaders of this aliyah in Pasuk Bet, verse 2, the parak continues by listing various groups that made aliyah along with them, in descending order of significance. The first group mentioned after the leaders, in Psukim Gimel through Lamed He, verses 3 till 35, are the 24,144 Yisraelim, the regular Jews. Some of the families listed here are identified by name, as in Psukim Bet through Chaf, verses 2 through 20, while others in Psukim Chaf Aleph through Lamed He, verses 21 through 35, are identified by their pre-exilic place of origin in Eretz Yisrael. For example, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, the Bnei Beit Lechem, the people of Beit Lechem. These people returned back to their ancestral homes upon arriving in Yehuda, as Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, states, Vayashuvu li-Yerushalayim v'Yehuda ish le-Iro. They returned to Yerushalayim and to Yehuda, each person to his city. The last time the Tanakh presented a list of people headed to Eretz Yisrael was at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, when the tribes of Bnei Yisrael were counted in the desert. There, the people were listed according to a highly organized clan structure that breaks down by tribe, then extended family, then household, and then male individuals. The contrast to the list of immigrants in Sefer Ezra, Perek Bet, is really striking. In Sefer Ezra, the list cannot be organized by tribe, 10 of the original 12 tribes were lost to the Jewish people after the Assyrian exile of the Kingdom of Israel in 722 BCE. The only tribes left in the Persian period are Yehuda, Benjamin, and Levi, along with a smattering of refugees from other tribes. Furthermore, compared to the organized clan structure in Bamidbar, the list in Sefer Ezra is kind of messy. Some families have names, some families are just called by their hometown. It's not consistent. No one is listed by Mishpacha and Beit Av the way they were in Sefer Bamidbar. In fact, in Pasuk Nun Tet, verse 59, Sefer Ezra tells us about a group of people who have lost not just their tribal affiliation, they cannot definitively prove their Jewishness at all. Pasuk Nun Tet, verse 59. Ve'ela ha'olim mitel melach, tel harsha, krivadan, imer, ve'lo yachlu lahagid beit avotam v'zaram im miyisraelhim. The following were those who came up from tel melach, tel harsha, kriv, adan, and imer. They were unable to tell whether their father's house and descent were from Israel. These people are identified by their cities of residence in Bavel, since they cannot prove that their families originated in Eretz Yisrael, or if they are members of the Jewish people at all. The chaos and confusion of exile, as people were uprooted and jumbled and resettled, has led to a severe erosion of identity compared to earlier times. Another point of contrast to Sefer Bamidbar is important. The census in the desert focused on males 20 years of age and older, those who could fight in the army that was preparing to attack and conquer the land of Canaan. In stark contrast stands the situation in Sefer Ezra. The people listed in Ezra Perek Bet journey toward Eretz Yisrael, not as conquering soldiers, but as subjects of a foreign empire, and their success in rebuilding Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash will in large part be dependent on their allegiance to Persia. They are reliant on the grace and goodwill of the Persian kings for permission and funding to rebuild. This lack of Jewish independence is part of what makes Shivat Zion bittersweet. Following the Yisraelim, the list of returnees in Ezra Perek Bet records the Kohanim, the priests, who joined Zerubbabel and Yehoshua on Aliyah. Kohanim comprise a disproportionately large percentage of the returnees, nearly 10% of the total. It makes sense that the Kohanim in particular, those who served in the Beit HaMikdash and are supported by that work, would have been especially eager to assist in its reconstruction. In Pasuk Mem, verse 40, the list goes on to record the Levim that went on Aliyah, adding separately the lists of Levite functionaries like the Meshorim, the singers, and the B'nai HaShoarim, the gatekeepers. Then, in Pasuk Mem Gimel, verse 43 through Nunchet, verse 58, the Netinim and the B'nai Avdei Shlomo are listed. These groups worked as temple personnel, assisting the Kohanim with menial labor. Chazal identify the Netinim as the Givonim, the Canaanite group who had tricked Yehoshua into sparing their lives during B'nai Israel's conquest of Eretz Canaan. Upon discovering that he'd been tricked, Yehoshua had relegated the Givonim to jobs as woodchoppers and water carriers for the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and later in history for the Beit HaMikdash. Their descendants are called Netinim in Sefer Ezra, a name which probably means given over in the sense that they were given over to temple service. These Netinim returned back to Eretz Yisrael during Shivat Zion to continue that service for Bayit Sheni, the second temple. We mentioned earlier the group of people described in Pasuk Nun Tet, verse 59, who could not definitively prove their Jewish identity. An even bigger crisis emerges in Pesukim Samach Aleph through Samach Gimel, verses 61 to 63, when a group of Kohanim, or at least people who claim to be Kohanim, fail to produce documentation verifying their claim to the kahuna, the priesthood. Pasuk Samach Bet, verse 62, reads, Eila bikshu kitavam hamityachsim velo nimtza'u v'yegoalu min hakahuna. These searched for their genealogical records, but they could not be found, so they were disqualified from the priesthood. It seems that due to the chaos and destruction of the Babylonian invasion and exile, local witnesses are not available to vouch for these supposed priests. Maybe everyone who knew their families is dead or exiled to a distant place, and all written genealogical records have been lost or destroyed as well. What should be done with these potential Kohanim? How can they serve in the Beit HaMikdash without verification? But how can they not if they really are Kohanim? In earlier times, such a quandary might be posed to a prophet who could consult with Hashem and return with a clear resolution. But we are now in Sefer Ezra, at the tail end of the biblical period, and prophecy is fading. The period of Shivat Zion features the last recorded prophecies in Jewish history, and they are intermittent and obscure. In Sefer Ezra, when difficult halachic or communal issues arise, we don't have the luxury of turning to Hashem for direct instructions and perfect clarity regarding how to proceed. Much like today, in the period of Shivat Zion, leaders rely on their knowledge of Torah, their reason, and intuition to make a judgment call in an ambiguous case. And so we read in Pasuk Samach Gimel, verse 63, Vayomer ha-tirshata lahem, the tirshata, said to them, Asher lo yochlu mikodesh ha-kadashim ad amod kohen le'urim ulitumim. The tirshata said to them not to eat of the most holy things until a priest with Urim and Tumim should appear. The tirshata, the governor, whom the commentators identify as Zerubbabel, decides to play it safe, and these unverified Kohanim forfeit their right to eat from the sacrificial portions, ad amod kohen le'urim ulitumim, until a time when their status can be decided by Hashem directly, via the medium of the Urim v'tumim, the special tool used by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, to communicate with Hashem. Essentially, Zerubbabel asks these Kohanim to wait indefinitely for verification. In a way, he is telling them and us that as we enter this new world without prophecy, we are going to have to learn to live with uncertainty, and our job is to navigate the circumstances we are presented with as best we can without perfect clarity. Pasuk Samach Dalet, verse 64, announces the total tally of returnees. Kol hakahal ke'achad, arba ribo alpayim shlosh me'ot shishim. The whole assembly together was 42,360. This number is over 11,000 more than what you would get by adding together the totals of each of the groups listed here. Perhaps this total includes the people who made Aliyah earlier in Perek Aleph with Sheish Batzar, although it's hard to know for sure. It's also difficult at first glance to figure out whether this is an overwhelming or underwhelming number. Is 42,000 a lot? Or might we have expected even more Jews to answer Koresh's call to return back to Zion and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash? This brings us to the purpose of this list altogether in our Sefer. On the one hand, this list certainly expresses appreciation and gives credit to those who did undertake the journey back to Eretz Yisrael and began the process of rebuilding. To give each family its due credit, the Sefer makes sure to record each name on this list. Yet, as Rabbi Chaim Angel suggests, the fact that the Sefer can list each and every family maybe conveys implicit criticism. The number of people was not overwhelming. We can actually just list all of them in Ezra Perek Bet. They weren't infinite. It wasn't impossible to count the number of people who came back. Certainly the impression that you get from the rest of Sefer Ezra and its sequel Sefer Nehemiah, as we will see, is that the returnees really struggled to build up the population of Yerushalayim and were outnumbered by the enemies they encountered there. In addition, the archaeological record supports only a small Jewish population in Yehuda throughout the Persian period. In rabbinic literature, Chazal, the sages, are unimpressed by the number of Jews who returned from exile during Shivat Zion. The Medrash Rabbah states, Ilu Yisrael ha'alu choma mibevel, lo harav Beit HaMikdash b'hahi shata pa'am sheni. Had the people of Israel ascended from Bavel like a wall, like a solid block altogether, the second temple would not have been destroyed. Essentially, Chazal are saying that the era of Shivat Zion was pulsing with redemptive potential. Had the Jewish people seized the moment, seized the opportunity that the Cyrus Proclamation presented to return back to their land as one, they could have secured the continued existence of the Beit HaMikdash forever. Imagine what Jewish history would have looked like if Shivat Zion in the 6th century BCE had ushered in the permanent end of exile, the final redemption. Yet, Chazal tell us, the moment was lost. Instead of ascending like a solid wall, only a fraction of the Jewish population of Babel trickled back to Eretz Yisrael. Throughout the entirety of the Second Temple period, there remains a large Jewish community in Babel. And as a result, the Second Temple does not last, and the Jewish people are eventually plunged once again into the darkness of exile. Why did so many choose to stay in Babel, even after Koresh gave them the green light to go back home? Many were likely comfortable in the new homes and communities they had built in exile, and were reluctant to give all that up for an uncertain fate back in their ravaged homeland. Others were skeptical that this was the moment of redemption at all, as we discussed in Ezra Perek Aleph, chapter 1. But whatever their reasons, Chazal criticize their inertia and its tragic, fateful consequences for Jewish history. This shiur is dedicated Lizecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudis Bas Gedaliahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.